Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Marriage Fitness with Mort Fertel. This is, not surprisingly, Mort Fertel. And this is your Q&A teleconference. Let me first give a brief explanation as to what a Q&A teleconference is. So the majority of all the other teleconferences in your program are what I call teleseminars. And on the evening of those teleseminars, I come with a very specific agenda. Certain principles and practices that I feel are crucial for every marital situation. And I take the entire time of those teleconferences to develop those ideas with you. Admittedly, there's no opportunity for you to interact with me, to ask me questions about what I'm presenting, or to ask me questions about what I'm not presenting, but what you feel is important to your situation. So those teleconferences are a monologue. Tonight is the exact opposite. It's not a monologue, it is a dialogue. I come with no agenda whatsoever. I have no idea what we're going to discuss. It's going to be up to you. It's based on your questions, based on how you explain your circumstances. So at the right time in the right way, you can come on the line, which I'll explain in a moment. Basically, you press *6. That'll cue you up. And if I call on you to ask a question, please start with your question. It's kind of a rule for the teleconference. If you come on the line to ask me a question, again, please start with your question. I know from experience, the reason why I'm emphasizing this is because people tend to start by giving me all sorts of background information about their spouse, their marriage, the other man, the other woman, whatever the case might be. It seems sometimes that people could go on forever and ever, and I wonder if there's ever a question in sight. I don't mean to sound insensitive. I know there's a lot of pain in your heart, a lot on your mind. I know it can be difficult to formulate a question, but please keep in mind this is not a private session. It's a Q&A teleconference. So you provide the Q, and I provide the A. That doesn't mean we won't have a chance to talk. We will, but please start with your question. And then allow me to probe you for the background information that I feel I need in order to answer your question. You'd be amazed at the information that I don't need, which you might otherwise take our time to provide. You'd also be amazed at the information that I do need, which you might not think to offer. So anyway, I hope at this point in the program you trust me, you realize no matter what you're going to ask me, the chances are good that I've answered the question a few thousand times. That doesn't mean I'm not on my toes here. I am. Doesn't mean I don't feel your pain. I do. But I just have a tremendous responsibility to many, many people on the line, and I cannot allow any one person to monopolize our time. So please, again, if you come on the line to ask me a question, start with your question. If you have a question, press *6. That'll cue you up. Pretty much any question is fair game. However, there are two types of questions I won't answer. Let me just explain. Number one is if you ask a question that's so good that it's answered extensively somewhere else in the program, so rather than take our time tonight to repeat the answer to that question, I'll just try to direct you to where in the program you can find a good answer to that question. Maybe it's on one of the audio files or in the workbook or another teleconference, whatever the case may be. I want to try to put out there as much new marriage help information as possible tonight, and I don't see the point in repeating answers to questions that you can get from your other resources. Secondly, is if you ask a question that's so unique to your situation that I simply cannot answer it in a way that will be useful for the majority of the people listening, I'll let you know, and I'll ask you to deal with me privately on that question. You shouldn't expect that to happen. I don't expect that to happen. I can count on one hand the number of times that's happened over the years, but I do like to mention it just in case it should come up. One more quick announcement. Well, not so quick, but one more quick announcement. Yeah, quick, whatever, announcement. We're getting lots of questions in the office about Mimi Daniel, David Rispoli, and Elise Hurtado. And, of course, these are the three other marriage professionals that work for me and that are available to you for extra private one-on-one sessions. And the questions are like, who are these people? What's my relationship to them? Does Mort recommend them? Are they familiar with the Marriage Fitness program? So let me just explain. Many of you are doing private sessions with me, either full-day intensive house calls or phone sessions. But a lot of you want extra one-on-one help, but can't afford my fees or don't want to use me for some reason. And so I selected David, Mimi, and Elise to work for me. Their fees are dramatically less than mine, and they're much more easily accessible as well. Their schedules is not so intense. And I chose them, first of all, you should know, because they share my values. That was really one of the most important selection criteria. If you feel a certain set of values coming across the plate to you here, and you want to speak to somebody who you know is pro-marriage and shares those values, you can count on David, Mimi, and Elise for that. I also pick them because they have an enormous amount of experience dealing with marital crisis situations, not just marital situations, which is typical for a marriage counselor or therapist, but marital crisis situations, which is what most of you are dealing with. I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say between the three of them, there's probably 40 years of professional experience dealing with marital crisis situations. So whatever you're dealing with, you can bet that they have dealt with it many times before and can be helpful. And thirdly, it would be an understatement to say that they are familiar with the Marriage Fitness Program. They are all certified marriage fitness professionals. I trained all of them myself. In addition to the initial training before they got their first session, we can conduct monthly teleconferences, the four of us, to hone our skills and share secrets. Okay, so I hope that answers everyone's questions about David, Mimi, and Elise. If you have any others, please feel free to be in touch with my office. Okay, let's dive in. Please, if I call on you, introduce yourself. Just give me your first name, ask your question, and then we'll go from there. So here we go.
Hi, Mort. This is Donnie.
Donnie, good evening. How are you?
Good, good. I just got back from our first date night.
Okay, good.
Where I ate alone. So my question is, how do you do date night by yourself?
I don't know. What do you mean by yourself? You can't do date night by yourself, can you?
Right, right. So how can I get her involved in this? We've been separated 9 months.
So let me ask the question. Let me answer the question that you should be asking, okay?
Okay.
You're dealing with an obstinate spouse. And so you're probably, when you're thinking of date night, you're thinking of dinner out. You said, I ate alone. If you're dealing with an obstinate spouse, going out to dinner for an hour or so is too big an ask. Of course you're going to do that alone. Of course she's not going to join you. But you're taking date night too literally. I say you, I mean Donnie. Maybe not all of you. Some of you may be in situations where your spouse will spend time with you, an hour of focused one-on-one time. And if you're in that situation, then you should take my instructions about date night literal. Don't invite anybody else to come along with you. Don't go to a movie. Do something facing each other. Okay, that's all good. But when you're in the Lone Ranger track like Donnie is, dealing with an obstinate spouse, be careful not to take that too literally. You have to realize, what's the point of date night? What really am I getting at? What really is the message? The point and the message is that you need to have some face time with your spouse. You need to have some interaction with them one-on-one. Now, when you're dealing with a difficult obstinate spouse, 30 seconds around the kitchen, table, sharing something about your day or some news item, that might be your FaceTime. That might be your interaction. That might be your, quote, date night for the week. Sometimes it's the couple of minutes that people have when they exchange the kids in the driveway. So those are just two examples, but you get the idea. If your spouse will actually go out with you and sit face to face, terrific. But if not, don't think that you can't do, quote, date night Okay? Your date night, you just have to contract it to be something much smaller and realize that those little interactions that you create, which are your date nights, so to speak, right now, can lead to there being more goodwill between the two of you, which will ultimately get you maybe to be able to share a cup of coffee at Starbucks for 10 minutes. And then maybe a month later, you're actually able to go out for a bite to eat together. So take the little steps. Don't look at it as binary. We had our date night, or we couldn't have our date night because she wouldn't go and I was alone. It's not quite that black and white and that simple. The people who are really successful with date night, people who are successful in turning these situations around, are people who take the little steps they can take toward the ideals that I am describing. And this is an important point, by the way, not just about date night, but about many of the ideals I'm describing. I'm describing them very often as an ideal because I want to paint the picture. I want to give you a vision. I want to help you realize where this can go and where this will go. But you're not going to get there overnight. You're going to have to take very, very small steps in that direction. You know how to jump 10 feet high, right? It's doable. 1 inch at a time.
Hello, Mort. My name is Sandra.
Sandra, good evening.
Good evening. Mort, I found out about my husband's mistress and affair 15 months ago. He cheated on me 12 years ago, and we've been working on recovery through counseling and the church and RetroVi and professional counseling and your 5-CD set and now your fitness, marriage fitness. No matter what we've done, I can't get him and her having sex out of my mind. And each night and each morning when I awake and when I close my eyes and when I wake up in the morning, the first thing that pops in my head is them having sex and stealing my special place from me, what used to be mine and mine only place away, and then watching that kind of go through. So my question is, what can I do to rid myself of seeing this over and over again and this pain and anguish that that makes her now a part of our lives, that she was easily to take away our fortress, and he gave it so easily.
Tell me a little bit about how the healing and reconciliation process is going otherwise.
Well, it was going very well in the first 5 months, and we even actually got remarried, which was a beautiful, wonderful celebration, and I was really feeling better. We had gone to RetroVi through Catholic counseling and with our deacon and so forth, and we had your abbreviated CD set, which we learned about date night and touch charge and talk charge. And we've been doing all that now for over 15 months, which has been fabulous. So all that has been really great. However, the mistress has come in time and time again, calling Christmas Eve, Thanksgiving, my birthday. You know, we get back from a date night or a cruise, going on a cruise for these wonderful experiences. And she keeps rearing her ugly head. And even though she's been out of his life for, you know, 12 years, supposedly, it's hard to heal. So now,
wait,
every time I go,
how does she keep coming back into it? You mean she calls you or something?
Yeah, she calls me up. She sees me on Facebook.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for that information. I can now answer your question.
Okay.
So one of the primary reasons why these images keep appearing, even after this much time, is because you have not succeeded with really step one of recovering from infidelity. Step one of recovering from infidelity is severing all contact with the mistress, the ex-mistress. And I know that she's probably the one taking the initiative and inserting herself into your life, but you can do something about that. You have to do everything in your power to eliminate, completely eliminate her from you and your husband's life. That means changing your cell phone numbers. That means blocking her email address. And if necessary, that means, by the way, you and your husband possibly sitting down with her once in a public place for about 30 seconds and very firmly, respectfully, but firmly telling her you don't want any contact with her, to either of you at all, for any reason whatsoever, that you're putting your marriage and your family back together, and it's destructive to have her in your life in any way, shape, or form, and to please respect that wish. It's a 30-second message delivered by the two of you, and then you get up and leave. It's not a dialogue. It's not a conversation. You're not there to answer questions. You're not there to help her heal from her pain. No. You deliver the message, and you leave. If after that she still does not respect your wish, you hire an attorney, and you file a restraining order. And I've coached people through this where actually once the ex-mistress ended up in jail for a period of time. The laws vary from state to state, but it's a serious thing. If you get a restraining order against somebody for these kinds of things, they need to be respected. Otherwise, the court does not look too favorably upon it. So it could be that you haven't done enough to eliminate her from your life. You have to take some of these steps. And that should help these images fade. The reason why they're not fading is because she's still in your life. I mean, I don't have to tell you, you know, one Facebook post, you know, one phone call, and all the images and thoughts and feelings and pain just comes flooding back into your heart. You know, you've really got to just completely get rid of, you know, get rid of her. However, I don't want to oversell this. I want to make one more point that I think is, you know, important to keep in mind. And that is that you'll never be able to completely rid yourself of these thoughts. I mean, you experience infidelity, that betrayal is a trauma. It's a trauma. And like almost any trauma in life, it marks you. It scars you. You never completely are able to rid yourself of it. Doesn't mean you can't have a great life. Doesn't mean you can't have a great marriage. It doesn't mean you can't be happy with each other. But you're not going to forget about this. Doesn't mean you can't forgive, but you're not going to forget. You know, you mentioned, you know, that Retrovi and your church, you know, sounds like you're people of faith. I'll just share with you two quick ideas. You know, when Jacob was wrestling with the angel right before he went back into the land of Canaan, so the, you know, the sun's coming up in the morning, and he gets he gets struck on the hip, and you know he limps for the rest of his life as a result of that. But that's one of the seminal moments, that wrestling match with the angel, one of the seminal moments in his life. In fact, from that moment on, he's no longer just referred to as Jacob. He's also now referred to as Israel. Sometimes he's referred to as Jacob. Sometimes he's referred to as, he takes on this additional name. The point being that he becomes something bigger and more than he was before this encounter. It was an experience that resulted in him growing and changing. But it was also a bit of a trauma that left him limping. Very often those two things go hand in hand. You can't expect to be the same and completely clean after a trauma like this. I'll share with you one more thing. Since you're people of faith, way back in the beginning, in Genesis, right, God says to Adam and Eve, "You can eat from all the trees of the garden, just the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Please don't eat from that. Most people know that they couldn't eat from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, but most people forget the first part of the verse, which says you can eat from all the trees. Enjoy yourself. It's a great world. It's just one that they couldn't eat from. And they had the whole world to enjoy. But all they were able to focus on was the one that they couldn't enjoy. And that led to their downfall. And so sometimes, you know, there's always a little something that's not quite right. And we have to be careful not to be like Adam and Eve and have it lead to our downfall. It's just part of the nature of life. The world can still be enjoyed. All can still be well, even though there can be something that's not quite 100%. Okay, let's go on. Anybody there? No? Okay, I'll try someone else.
Hi, Mort.
Hi there. What's your name?
My name is Annette.
Okay, Annette, how can I help?
What is the best way to start being intimate again with your husband when there has been probably multiple other women, and there's a concern with, shall we say, uncleanliness?
Are you, uncleanliness, you're referring to STDs?
Yes. What is the best way to approach without going into the past, I guess?
Yeah. So it's a very good but very, very difficult question. You know, if you're uncomfortable being intimate with your husband because he's been intimate with others and you're concerned that your health might be at risk, I wouldn't say it's going backwards to address that with him. It's actually an attempt on your part to go forward. You know, the message is, I want to be with you. I want, you know, us to enjoy that part of our life. I want, you know, us to be able to heal and move forward. And in order for us to do that, I have to feel safe, secure, and free to be uninhibited with you. And, you know, you could really help me with that. How you want to finish the idea, but going with me to the doctor or taking a certain test or, you know, whatever it is that that would help you feel safe and secure and free to move forward. It's really all about moving forward. It's certainly, I can't imagine that he wouldn't understand. You know, it is your health that's at risk. So it's uncomfortable, it's difficult, there's no easy way, but it shows that you care about that part of your life and that part of your relationship with him and that you want to move forward. So just, you know, to call it a courageous conversation. Sometimes we have to have them.
Yeah.
Hey, Mort, this is Donna. I recently found out that my husband has had happy ending massages. My question is there a way he can be there for me, and is there a way for him to help me with my crying episodes, or am I on my own?
I mean, it's funny. It's interesting that you're asking me that. It's not him that's asking me that. It's you that's asking me that, which is interesting to me. I mean, Can you answer that question? I don't know. You tell me. Is there a way that you think that he can help you when you're in that moment, when you're having a crying episode? What do you feel that you need from him?
I feel that I would need him to just hold me and reassure me that, you know, it was just a mistake, it was impulsive, you know, things of those nature.
Okay, that sounds reasonable, and I would encourage you to share that with him, assuming that he wants to be helpful and is open to that. But it sounds like this is something that happened repeatedly.
Well, he said it happened 3 to 4 times.
I wouldn't describe that as impulsive. That's pretty deliberate.
Okay.
So I'm just wondering if, and I think that, I wonder if that's what he's told you.
That's what he told me.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. And, of course, maybe there's an element of impulsivity, particularly the first time. But after that, I don't know if it could be described. And I wonder if you know deep down the truth of what I just said, which is that it's not just impulsive, but that there's some element of deliberateness to it.
Right.
The reason I bring that up is because your crying spells and your ability to heal, I think, would be aided by some real honesty between the two of you in terms of, you know, what are some of the things that led to this occurring, and what, you know, what can you do to prevent and protect against it going forward? So I know that sounded kind of abstract. Let me give you 2 examples. So one example might be that, you know, it's possible that from his perspective, there was something missing in your sex life. It's possible that he was feeling unfulfilled intimately. And, you know, the question is for him, what was missing? Why was he feeling unfulfilled? And what kind of steps can you guys take to spark excitement in that part of your life? Because when there is spontaneity and excitement and fulfillment in that part of one's life, they want to channel all of that to the person that they're married to that provides that spark and that spontaneity and that excitement.
Right.
They don't want to dilute it or risk it by going outside the marriage.
Right.
So that's one thing. That's one example. A second example is that, you know, my guess, I don't know, but my guess is that places like this that, you know, have offered these massages with, as you describe, happy endings, my guess is that not every client has a happy ending. Not every massage ends in that way. And so it's important that we not put ourselves in situations where we are tested in ways that we might fail. So, for example, I'm giving you an example of an example. Sorry, I'll follow my thinking here. If, let's say, God forbid, someone's an alcoholic, they went to AA, they got clean and dry, they've been sober for years, okay? Now, if you come to my house, you know, I could offer you a glass of wine. We have wine in my house. It's not a problem. Occasionally, maybe a couple times a month, I'll have a glass of wine. And I like to have a little wine in case somebody comes over and they want a glass of wine. What's the big deal? But if you're, God forbid, an alcoholic, you can't have a drop of wine or alcohol in your house. You can't even go to a restaurant with a liquor license. You have to avoid, you know, the possible seduction. And so, depending on what our vulnerability is, we might have to impose certain lifestyle changes on ourselves that help protect us from our vulnerabilities, from our weaknesses. As I like to say, smart people know the kind of situations in which they will be dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And they avoid them.
Right.
They put things in place so that they you know, it's like I get very worried when people say to me, I can handle it. I won't fail in that situation. I won't succumb to that seduction, right? And I don't want to have to not go to a restaurant with a liquor license. Like, that's just crazy. I cannot drink. Like, the tough guy attitude, you know what I mean? I don't need that. I can handle it. I get very nervous. There's a level of arrogance there. Everybody is weak. Everybody has their weaknesses, their time and their place. And a really smart, sophisticated person knows that about human nature. And more than that, they know their weaknesses. And they're smart enough to avoid them. Foolish, stupid people are the people who think they're always going to be smart enough and strong enough to avoid the seductions that ultimately end up ensnaring them. And so, you know, this might be disappointing to your husband, or maybe you guys have already come to this conclusion, but your husband cannot get massages anymore. He can't. You know, he lost that opportunity in his life. You know, the only person that can give him a massage is you.
Right.
You know, that's just a second example. Anyway, thank you for the question.
Hi, Morg.
Hi.
Hi, this is Maria.
Okay, Maria, good evening. How can I help you?
Yeah, I found out that my husband was having an emotional affair for maybe a couple months or so. And I actually, you know, I know the phone number and maybe even the name, but I don't really know who this person is. I know that she gave him a lot of business referrals. And some of that makes me a bit uncomfortable because perhaps some of those transactions in the businesses are not completely done yet. But I guess my question is, because I live in a small town and I'm certain she knows who I am, but I feel I'm at a disadvantage because I don't know who she is, and I feel uncomfortable with that.
What do you mean a disadvantage? It's not a competition.
Well, you know, like I feel like I could be in the same grocery store as her.
So what if you are?
Then she would know exactly who I am, and my husband and her can, like, be, you know, seeing each other, and I wouldn't have a clue that that's a person that he was intimate with.
So,
I mean, it's just a painful thought, you know, walking around town, this person knows what's happened, but
would it be a less painful thought if you knew who it was and you saw her in the supermarket?
I feel like I would at least have some kind of, you know, like,
I think because you're not experiencing it, you don't know what that would feel like.
Yeah.
That wood doesn't sound too pretty to me either.
Yeah.
You know who she is and what she looks like. You're going to be constantly looking over your shoulder. Is that her? Is she going to be here? Is she going to be there? Maybe you're better off not knowing.
Yeah, I mean, I had a feeling you would say that, just based on having listened to a lot of your talks, but it's just the discomfort of being in this small town and feeling like the two of them know, you know, who each other is and who I am, and we could all be in the same room and I would have no clue. And it's just
But again, I don't mean to sound insensitive when I say this, but my response is so. I mean, like, practically, like, I understand the feeling, but again, I think you're focused on that feeling and not focused on the feeling you would have if you did know who she was, because that's not the situation that you're in. I'm not sure that, you know, knowing would provide, in any event, you're going to have some ill feelings. Right?
Either way you go. I could at least, I feel like I could protect myself a little better if I knew, you know, maybe to even avoid the same aisle in the grocery store, avoid the line at the post office, you know, just that kind of feeling, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, that would be worse. I have to live my life now avoiding certain stores or certain aisles, constantly looking out. Oh, my gosh, there she is. That sounds like torture to me. That's why, you know, I mentioned this once before, you know, post-infidelity 101 is to sever contact with the ex-mister or mistress. Sever contact. You can't have anything to do with them. You can't see them. I have recommended to people that they move to a different city because that person what is so around and so in their environment and in their sphere of friends and stuff that there's just there's no path forward in their marriage. And so leave. So at least, you know, at least you don't have that person that you're looking in the eyes or that you're interacting with or you're at the football game with or whatever. But I understand it's not perfect because, you have this feeling that you're describing. I don't have a solution. I don't know what to tell you. You know, in either event, you're going to be dealing with some ill feelings. I'm not sure you're any worse off now than you would be if you knew who she was. And we're, by the way, this is all feelings that we're talking about. Practically speaking, it doesn't really make a difference.
Thank you.
Okay, I hope it was helpful.
Hi, Mort. It's Gaylene.
Hi there.
My question is, how do I get back to loving my husband as a husband and not as a son or somebody that I take care of?
I mean, that's a gigantic question. in my mind, I'm going to give you an answer which I know will be unsatisfying to you, but it kind of will force you to sharpen the question. In my mind, the whole program is an answer to that question. Because we love somebody like, we love a spouse like a child when we are not really intimate with them, when the nature of the relationship is not personal, and all the principles and practices that I'm teaching are not teaching you to be simply good roommates, it's teaching you to be soulmates. So in my mind, the whole program is an answer to the question. Let me put it another way. A word that I use over and over again is the ingredient that you're looking for, which is connection. An intimate connection we feel exclusively with our spouse. And how do I rebuild that intimate connection? It's all the principles and practices that I'm teaching. Notice I said all of them. It's not one of them. It's the combination of all of them.
Is it possible to get that back when I feel like kind of like a mother?
Why not?
Okay.
I mean, of course, feelings in a relationship change all the time. My guess is many years ago, you didn't feel like his mother. You felt like his girlfriend. And then you felt like his wife. And presumably during those periods of time, you felt like his lover. And then it's not uncommon, I understand, that then you started to, like, you know, take care of him and maybe the kids and the family. And it became, you know, you morphed into a different kind of role in a relationship. And the intimacy and the closeness and the connection got drained out of your relationship. So now you're at the point where you, you know, feel like, as you described, like his mother. So, so I lost my train of thought there. But of course that can change. You know, relationships change, feelings change over the course of relationships. They change one way, they can change another. You know, it's always amazing to me that, you know, of course, most people, when they get married, you know, there's this passion and excitement and they're in love and we're going to be together and everything is great. And we have these just such positive, energetic, loving feelings. And then, you know, and you can't imagine that you would feel any differently. And here you are now, 10, 20, 30 years later, and of course you feel very differently, right? That love, that passion, that energy, excitement, it's gone, it's dead. And what a dramatic change. And it happens right there to you. And I always find it ironic when people say that it can't change again. Really? Why not? Why would it be any more unlikely that you could go through a new change than the change that you already went through? The one you went through was ridiculously unlikely too. You never thought it would happen. You could never imagine it. Never to you. But it happened. Right? What, and now this new change that you're imagining, it can't happen? Really? Why not? So there's a whole section, a very important section in the program, about the nature of feelings, about how they're not permanent, but they're temporary, about how our most recent interactions with a person is what most influences our feelings toward that person. In other words, it's our most recent experience with a person that influences how we feel about that person. I don't want to get into it because it's a very important discussion, and it's I don't know, 10 or 20 minutes, and it's an audio file in the program. But it just enlightens people to the truth and the reality about the nature of feelings and their temporalness. Okay.
Good evening. This is Jill.
Hi, Jill.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How can I fight for my husband when he has moved out for the third time in 12 months and is seeing his mistress again?
So I apologize. I do this to you, Jill, as I did to a caller recently, but the whole program is an answer to that question.
How do I know when to stop? Like, do you ever recommend stopping before 1 year?
No.
Okay.
Are you looking for an excuse to stop before a year?
No.
Okay, good. Don't. No, don't. I never do recommend it. I don't deal with cases of physical abuse. That's the only situation where I could imagine recommending it. But I don't deal with those cases, so I have never. And no matter what else is going on in your situation, there is never a reason, in my opinion, to give up before that year. Because, and I'll explain why. It ties into the previous caller, because feelings change, and feelings change based on interactions between people. And feelings change based on specific interactions between people. You ended up in this situation. It's not by chance. It's not bad luck. The outcome of a relationship is a direct result of the behavior of two people in a relationship. So until you understand what the behaviors are that drove your marriage into the ditch, and until you understand what the behaviors are that can actually create love and connection, and until you not only learn them, but you employ them for some reasonable length of time, let's say, for example, a year, how how could one possibly know what the outcome of that effort would be? There is no way to know.
So even if I see, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Even if I see apathy, I should just keep trying?
Why not?
Okay.
Apathy is a feeling, or the lack of a feeling, however you want to look at it. It's not good. Not good. I don't mean to minimize it. But feelings change. And feelings change based on interactions between people. Create new interactions. You give life to new feelings. It's just the way it works. There were a couple of people who weren't able to attend tonight and emailed questions. I wanted to try to get to them. I thought these would benefit everybody. Dear Mort, how to handle a situation when divorce process is a legal matter and one person cannot file without consent of another? Can it be a control issue and hinder the reconciliation process? I am determined to do all correction, but he is considering this as a roadblocker in his way to freedom. Thanks, Runa. Well, yeah, of course, because, you know, because he right now has in mind to exit. And so he wants you to cooperate with that exit so that it can go smoothly, quickly, inexpensively, and maybe most importantly, so he can feel like he has a partner in his crime. In other words, if you join him in the process, it helps clear his conscience that he's not doing this alone. He can say, we are going to the mediator. We are splitting up the assets. We decided to get divorced. We are moving on. We, right? We always, when we're doing something wrong, we want company. And that company allows me to clear my conscience and justify what I'm doing. But if the people around me, or the person closest to me, says, no, I'm not joining you in that. That's not right. I can't be part of that. I can't have that on my conscience. I can't have that on my record. So then that tugs on my conscience and makes me really question whether or not I can have it on my conscience, whether or not I can have it on my record, whether or not I can justify doing that. So for any of you that are dealing with any aspect of the legal process, or even for that matter, if you're dealing with a spouse that's even trying to discuss with you a separation, which is not necessarily a legal matter, you should unequivocally refuse to participate in those discussions or any aspect of the process whatsoever, other than what you are legally compelled to do. In the case of divorce, in certain states, depending on what stage you're at, you are legally compelled to take certain action. And I don't want you to be in contempt of court. If you're legally compelled to do so, you should. But other than that, you should not. You should take the stance that you're a married person, committed to your family and marriage, and that it would be a violation of your values to participate in any activity that is designed to destroy your family. And certainly talking about or taking any action in a separation or divorce process is an activity designed to destroy your family. And as a matter of principle, you should refuse to do it. It's not control. It's not a roadblock. Your spouse, it's interesting what you said in your email. I don't know where you're writing from. Maybe it's international. I'm not even an American lawyer, no less an international lawyer. But, you know, generally speaking, in the Western world, you can't legislate somebody to remain married to you. If they want to divorce you, they can. But your message to them should be, don't ask me to help you, because I can't do it. I can't have it on my conscience. I can't have it on my record. I can't have that as an example to our children. And that will shift the full burden of responsibility to them logistically, which makes the whole process much more arduous. But more importantly, it will also shift the full burden of responsibility to their conscience. And that's what the obstinate spouse is really looking for, is a way to exit the marriage that whereby they can still live with themselves. They can feel justified. They can feel like they have a story to tell themselves and others that clears their conscience. And you don't want to help them with that. In fact, if you behave in the way that I'm advising, you'll end up ruining their story. I'm not saying your intent is to ruin their story. your intent is to do the right thing, to be a great wife, to be a great husband, to have a great marriage, to be a tower of moral authority and to do the right thing. I'm just pointing out that if you make choices every day that reflect that value, the unintended consequence will be that you'll ruin their story. And by the way, that's one of the most important things that has to happen in order for you to turn this around, because they can't exit the marriage without that story intact. And when you start participating voluntarily in the divorce and separation process, you're helping them keep that story intact. When you refuse, it helps ruin it. Okay. Let's see. My wife has had an affair for an unknown amount of time with one of her employees. He's someone that I would consider a friend and someone that is vital to her business operation. I know that most experts suggest that in order to move on and recover from infidelity, the parties need to cease all contact with the other. Yes, that's true. This may prove to be difficult since he is her general manager of her business. From what I can tell, the affair has ceased, and I know that confronting either one would not do good, except to satisfy my own heart over the ordeal. I feel like the correct thing to do is to move forward and try to heal the broken parts. I'm looking for some guidance from Mr. Fertel on how to manage this situation, not allow negative thoughts or mistrust into my thoughts, when I know that they will have to continue to work together and even spend hours alone together in work functions. Okay, I'm going to be very brief on this because it's covered in the program, but I can tell from your question you haven't gotten to this section of the program. So in the solutions library, there's an audio file called How to Rebuild Trust. Now, be careful. There's a few on trust, but there's one that's about 30 minutes long where I'm talking about the three pillars of trust. I'm not going to go through them here, but anybody that's dealing with trust in their marriage, it's a crucial, crucial piece of content in the program. Anyway, the point is that the second pillar of trust is to be beyond suspicion. In other words, our responsibility is not just to do the right thing, but it's to be beyond suspicion. People think that in order to be trusted in your marriage, you just have to do the right thing. You can't make a mistake. That's not true. You don't have to make a mistake to break the trust in your marriage. You just have to look like you're making a mistake. Suspicious behavior destroys the trust in a relationship. This is one of the reasons, just to tie this into a previous point, that post-infidelity 101 is to sever all contact with the ex-mistress or mister, just as you referred to in your question. You're absolutely correct. And so you and your wife are going to have to decide whether or not what's more important in your life, your family and your marriage, or having a certain general manager in your wife's business, because the two are completely incompatible. You're trying to have both, and you can't. You cannot. It is impossible. Because them working together is inherently suspicious. It always will be. There's no way around it. And so you'll never have the opportunity to really make any serious progress in rebuilding trust. I mean, you can make some progress on some other fronts. I meant some other fronts in terms of rebuilding trust. There are three pillars of trust. You can certainly make progress on the other two. But at the end of the day, your wife is not going to be able to be beyond suspicion. If she can't be beyond suspicion, you will never feel safe and secure. If you don't feel safe and secure, you'll never trust her. And if you'll never trust her, there's going to be a big hole in your marriage forever. So just telling it to you straight, this is not sustainable. And I would encourage you and your wife to not be delusional and not waste time trying to convince yourselves that you can somehow make this work. You can't. And you're either going to have to give up on trust in your marriage or give up on this general manager, one or the other. I'd recommend the general manager goes. Okay.
Hi, Mort.
Good evening. What's your name?
Oh, my name is Greg.
Okay,
first,
Greg.
I just want to say thanks for taking my question, and thanks to everybody else for asking their questions and having the courage to ask their questions.
Okay, thank you for saying that. You're welcome.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm just beginning the program now, and I wanted to ask you, does the program address specific issues that my wife kind of battles with, like grief, anxiety, depression, and too much drinking? And if it doesn't, do you have any specific advice for these kind of issues, you know, how to deal with them while trying to strengthen the marriage?
Well, so that's a gigantic question, and you're bringing up multiple issues there that I understand they might be related to each other in some ways, but they also are their own issue all by them, each of themselves. So we definitely don't have time for me to answer this thoroughly. So I'm going to have to be selective, and I'll just share with you one point that might be helpful. When it comes to issues like addiction and depression, they are... think of how I can say this really succinctly. There are a lot of things, of course, that contribute to things like depression and addiction. But I believe, and others as well, believe strongly that at the core of those two matters is a lack of connection to another human being. That at the core of our existence is this existential desire to really be connected to another person. We were connected to our mother before we were born. We were even connected briefly shortly after we were born. We felt taken care of and very close to our family when we were being raised. And in a sense, we are looking for to sort of regain that connection, but in adulthood it's not with our mother anymore, now it's with our spouse. And without it, we're highly depressed, can be anxious, and one dysfunctional coping mechanism that people use is to fill that hole with drugs, alcohol, pornography, and other dysfunctional behaviors. And so at the root of many of these dysfunctions, eating disorders, is a lack of connection to another human being. I always find it ironic when people say to me that, you know, Mort, there's really nothing I can do to improve my marriage until my husband or wife gets help with their drinking. Just as an example, I find that ironic. Why? Because the assumption in that statement is that it's the drinking, or let's say the depression, that is the cause, and the effect is the failed marriage. There's no question that drinking, depression, and other things like that contribute to a broken marriage. But I think the flow goes the other way as well, maybe even stronger. That is, it's the broken marriage or the lack of connection to another human being that is contributing to somebody's desire to drink and is contributing significantly to their depression, anxiety, etc. So I always advise people that if you really want to help your spouse with their depression, if you really want to help their spouse with their addiction, the greatest thing you can do is to employ the principles and practices of the program, because they're designed to help you and your spouse feel connected. Let me put it to you this way. Have you ever known a person who is ecstatic in their marriage and deeply connected with their spouse, but who was also depressed, but who was also an alcoholic, but who was also eating disorder, but who was also cutting, but who was also, utilizing pornography every night? The answer to all those questions is no. You don't, and you won't, because the two things don't go together. There actually was a phenomenal TED Talk. I wish I could remember the name of the author on this topic, the link between connection and addiction. What's his name? It was an odd European name, odd for an American. I'm sorry, I can't remember. But maybe you could Google it and find that it was about 15 minutes and it was really phenomenal. Really, he was just making the point that I just made. Okay, let's go on.
Yes, Mark, this is Brad. I had a question. I am suffering with intimacy issues with my wife, emotional intimacy. She just doesn't trust me anymore and all that, so I just wanted to know how to go about this without sounding needy or pushing too much.
I'm sorry, Brad. Try me again. I didn't understand your question.
Okay. Me and my wife, we're suffering from emotional intimacy issues.
I don't know what does that mean. That's very abstract.
Well, very abstract. Well, I'm on the Lone Ranger track right now, and I just wanted to approach her with some issues that I had, and I just wanted some advice on how to do it without sounding pushy or needy.
Give me an example of one issue.
Okay, let me think of one here. Just communicating at a deeper level. You know, talking about our futures and stuff like that.
Can you be more specific? What about your future? Do you want to speak to her?
Well, just kind of where we're at, where
we're at, meaning the relationship?
Well, no, I know where the relationship is. It's not very good, or I wouldn't be doing this, but no, like future plans and stuff like that, how to bring that up without sounding needy.
Plans like where you're going to go to dinner tomorrow night, where you're going to vacation next month. I'm still not clear on what you're talking about.
Let's see here. I'm having a hard time with this.
Well, it sounds like you've been thinking about this a lot, and you really want to have this conversation with her. Have it with me. Mm-hmm. Tell me what is the conversation you want to have with her.
Oh, that's. Just things that have happened in the past and all that, why things developed the way they did and all that stuff. Like bad things.
Things happened in the past in terms of the relationship and why the relationship developed like that. So that's Marriage Fitness 101, which is don't have those conversations.
Okay.
Right? Because how's that going to build goodwill and connection? That's going to bring up the ugly past. You're probably going to have differing perspectives. It's going to create argument and conflict. I don't think that's going to be productive. And I don't know, it could be you're very new to the program, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with being new. But in some of the initial sections in the program, I talk about the importance of putting those problems and issues and all the past aside, how strategies for exercising discipline for not going there. So I sense from your question that you're wanting to have conversations with her and asking me about how to go about having certain conversations with her that I wouldn't advise you having. I think I don't want to give you an answer to that question. I don't want to help you with that objective. I don't think it'll be helpful to your marriage. I think you're better off realizing that it's not going to be helpful, and that you should avoid those conversations. And your desire to have them, I wonder if that's part of what's contributing to the bad place you're in. Instead, when you have access to your wife, and you have time with her and you have energy stored up for her, use it to move forward in more positive ways instead of backwards into the negativity in the past and how you got to where you are. Okay, I hope that I appreciate all of your wonderful questions. Hope you found my responses helpful. Keep up the good work. Let me know what else I can do to help. Good night, everybody.